Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
I want to welcome you all back from the summer break, the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group, with a topic about the self and the mandala, which I'm pronouncing in the German way. And this is a topic I had a hard time to talk about for a very long time. And the reason is Jung does not talk so much about the self. It's very often a limited matter. So if you read the collected works, very often there's not so much. When you read the first chapter of Ion, there's a very good introduction into Jungian psychology. And there you have a rundown how he sees the psyche and how it's structured. And there, of course, the middle point is the self. And he also talks about mandalas from time to time, very often in a psychotherapeutic background. And I recently finished reading the vision seminar. So Jung gave multi-year seminars, one about dreams, and one about visions, and one about Nietzsche's first spoke Zarathustra. And the vision seminar is really, really good, but it's also very long. And if you want to buy it, it costs something like 500 euros. But if you look on the internet, you sometimes find PDFs that do not cost 500 euros, but that's open to everyone. And this was finally the point where I realized, okay, now I understand what the self really is and could connect a lot of other things he mentioned in other works. So this term itself comes from Eastern philosophy, since Jung was interested in Eastern philosophy, and Jung very often tried to use colloquial known words and terms, the concepts he wanted to talk about. So he was really against all the doctors and psychologists who made up like Latin terms to complicate things. So he tried more to use common words and words that have been used before to describe what he's talking about. For example, archetypes was used by the old Romans. I think it was Cicero used it first in some letters. Then you have the shadow, which really is just describing the thing that is created by light behind an object. And you have logos, which comes more from Christian religion. And you have eros, that's also coming from the Greek, and so on. So he uses terms where he thinks, oh, they're already existing, and they're already pretty much describing what he tries to say. And the self is one of that. And for him, the self has a center position in the psyche. So he sees, just to make a quick rundown about the structure of the psyche, how Jung sees it, what we are and what we experience, this is the ego and the consciousness all around it. It's a little bit like the fire forest, and around it there's light surrounding the area of the forest. And the ego is what we, like the center of us, which perceives and which has a will and can act purposefully. We can make a plan and act it out. This is then the ego. And everything we do and know and are aware about, this is our consciousness. And this is why this association is between light and consciousness, because consciousness is the known, it's the understood, it's the integrated. And everything outside, it's the unconscious, so the rest of the forest and everything that might hide in the forest. And he says, the immediate unconscious for us is always the things we ignore about ourselves. And this is our shadow side, our personal unconscious. It's where things are by accident, or things we don't want to think about, that we don't want to deal with. They're hidden parts of our personality. But it goes further for him. He says there is a very deep part, which is the collective unconscious. And this is a parts of psychology that we share with all human beings that exist now, that has existed before, and even with animals. And it could be said human nature and things that go even deeper. So the consciousness part is a very small part in the psyche, since we don't know so much and don't know everything about ourselves and also about the world, which is also illuminated by consciousness, but also is very unknown to us in big parts. And he sees the self as the totality of the psyche of everything combined. he calls it also the objective psyche. So while we have our little conscious part, the rest of the psyche could also be a unified thing, a unified being, and this is the self. And the reason why things are not necessarily unified is because we have a direction where we want to go and a direction where we adapted to. But there's a lot of other stuff we're not adapted to because it's too conflicting with each other. So he sees, for example, the four different ways how information reaches consciousness and the ego and the cognitive functions of feeling, thinking, sensation, and intuition. And he says just feeling and thinking block themselves because it's different whether I'm trying to, let's say, scientifically think about something and trying to label it, or whether I add a value judgment or not to it. So going too much into thinking makes feeling into the shadow. So people might be missing out because you need your whole psyche to function. But there's more. There's only not the personal part and the personal unconscious part. There's also the collective part. And this makes it a little bit difficult. And this is a point where I always had my trouble when Jung wrote about, okay, yeah, it's just the totality of the psyche. And I wondered myself, okay, does it mean really the self integrates all the parts that are in the collective unconscious, all the parts that are in other human beings and animals and so on, like all the instincts? Because Jung describes this. He says the self is the unification of everything. There's the thesis, the antithesis, and the synthesis all existing at the same time. It's a unification of opposites. The things that cannot, that basically fight each other, are present in the same thing. I finally found the quote where he brings everything together and he says, the self is a little made of part of the collective unconscious. So it's not the complete collective unconscious that exists, but it's part of the collective unconscious and it's personal. One big problem about the collective unconscious and the unconscious in general is that it's extremely impersonal. For example, basic instinctual drives and motivations like fear, hunger, lust, hatred, and all these things, they're impersonal. They grab the person and they just and want to act out their existence. And the same as it with the archetypes which make up the collective unconscious. Those are the little stories that can unfold over time. Those are patterns of behavior. Like when the bird builds a nest, it acts out an archetype. It's not the will of the bird. It's just something in the bird telling it you have to do it and acts out this pattern of finding a mate, building a nest, laying eggs, and then raising them and finally abandoning them to have the next nest. And I always wondered, okay, so the integration of the self, the goal of individuation, the goal of one's individual life would be to integrate all those archetypes. And Jung says, no, it's there are collective contents that are kind of selected, and they're selected for one self. There is, in all these impersonal things that are happening in the unconscious, especially in the collective unconscious, there's a personal component happening, and this is the self. The self is designated to oneself, and it is a little bit like a guiding principle, like an organizer of contents of the collective unconscious, meaning like collective contents that manifest in one's life. It is, Jung goes even so far to say, like the thing that we experience, what we see and are able to perceive in the world is very often our projected psyche, that we are only seeing what we're able to see filtered through the consciousness, the things we are trained, but that there are also things from our unconscious being projected into the outside world that we do not see in ourselves. And it's not random what gets projected. Rather, it's mitigated by the self what is important is selected. It's a little bit like when you have an interest. When you have 10,000 things, 10 million things in the world that exist, and suddenly something screams out to you. And very often when you have an interest, it's you are highly interested in it without knowing anything about it, but you want to spend more time with it. You want to make it more conscious. You want to elaborate and find out more. But it's not unique. Not everybody has the same interest in the world. Everybody has different interests that interest them. And for Jung, this is basically the self calling out consciousness to come find out and develop, because the goal of consciousness is to grow and grow and to integrate more and more things of the unconscious to become complete, to fill out this complete space, which is basically the self, to combine all the opposites, to combine and be master, or let's say skillful in handling archetypes, instincts, and so on, unconscious contents. So this is a one big personal part in the unconscious that one has. And you have to think about it a little bit like a magic circle coming and fencing off like a part of the collective, of the world. And this part suddenly speaks to you and comes important for the development. This is a kind of an assembling process taking place. And this is now becomes a little bit complicated because it goes in the idea of synchronicity. Assembling in this concept means an archetype assembles, for example. When the bird builds a nest, it becomes assembling process that the bird starts to get all the pieces of the nest and brings it into the nest and searches a little space. And this assembling process is a little bit also like snowflakes. You have water, it gets cold, and it automatically has this geometric form. And it follows certain rules. It's always six sides. Every snowflake is different. That's why I say it's like a snowflake. Everything is different, but it still follows some geometric rules. The self basically does also this, but for one's individual life. So it's guiding in the sense that it starts to assembling not only images in the psyche, but for Jung, and this is a synchronistic aspect, situation in one's life. When Jung talks about the idea of things you are not aware of in yourself start happening around you, for Jung, it's a big part perceptive in the things you don't want to see about yourself, you find outside. This is why people see the shadow outside of themselves and other people. But what they really see are the psychological contents they don't want to take care of in themselves. But Jung is farther in saying, okay, the things that are happening around oneself, the situations one encounters in the outside world, so not only in the inside world, are also assembled and mitigated by the self. And this is synchronicity, the connection between the psychological and the external world, and it manifests itself in weird coincidences. And let's say in ironic situations, it's this idea of, okay, you never run the red lights, but if you do, the police sees you. So things coming together in curious, seemingly random ways that get a meaning through them happening to oneself and one's life. So oneself acting in the situation and the situation creates something of kind of a special situation and pattern. One could say Jung sees the self a little bit like the guardian angel as a good conscious that reminds people also when they go off too far in the wrong direction. Like there's something pushing inside the psyche people into the path that it's laid out to them. So it's an idea of when you have like a tree seed, like an acorn, the oak is already inside the acorn. It's just a matter of time of unfolding. And of course, the right circumstances to allow for the unfolding, that it's just an unfolding over time. If you would compress time and see it all at the same thing, you would see the acorn and the oak at the same time. But yeah, it needs time to unfold. So Jung is very cautious about the unconscious. So he treats it really like bad weather. It's something you have to survive in certain situations. For him, onslaught about unconscious contents can also create severe psychological problems, mental problems like psychosis or schizophrenia, where images from the collective unconscious become so overwhelming that they break apart consciousness and fragment the whole of personality. So people are basically gone. And here again, he has this one personal component that's trying to help and support. And this is the self. The self can be understood as this, let's say, future you. It's the potential that is within you. It's the oak while you're still an acorn. And it's trying to guide the evolution and the unfolding to the oak. So it is the strong partner for Jung in exploring and living through the unconscious and also through life. In that sense, it's similar to the solar system where you say, okay, you have in the middle the sun, and then you have the things revolving around the sun. And there you have of course, the self as the sun in the middle, and the ego, the consciousness, is moving around the self, guided and, let's say, predetermined in its path by the self. This external point of reference is pretty important for Jung, because he says the ego and consciousnesses can get lost very easily. This is then the case of inflation or possession, where, as I mentioned before, an instinct or a drive or emotion can just sweep people away. They are then carried away by anger or hatred or lust or also joy. They lose themselves in an emotion, in an instinct. And keeping this external reference point in mind helps to have a neutral ground, a neutral point in space that can always be referenced to separate oneself from these extremely strong drives. If we want to get into religious terms, that would be to pray to a higher power. And he mentions that, to have this connection to something transcendent and strong. He also said the ego and consciousness itself is not necessarily strong enough to overcome the eternal and ageless archetypes. So it needs to have like a friendly power also there. And that friendly power for Jung is the self. So for Jung, how people encounter the psyche happens very often in a personalized way. So as I said, these different layers of the unconscious, the personal unconscious, the collective unconscious, those can become personalized. And the personal unconscious part is personalized by the shadow. As I mentioned before, all the bad qualities that one has about oneself and does not want to think about, or all the, let's say, dormant potential that is wasted and laying by the wayside, pops up and pressures onto the consciousness to remind them, okay, you can be more, you can evolve. So this is the shadow, and when everything personal is integrated in shadow integration, one encounters the collective unconscious. There one encounters the anima or the animus based on one's gender. So males encounter the anima and females, according to Jung, encounter the animus. While these are different parts, again, it's all included in the objective psyche, in the total psyche, in the self. So it's a part of the self interacting with ego and consciousness, the part which is right now at the stage where ego and consciousness need to evolve. For example, the anima is the female part of the objective psyche, of the self. And this is what people then encounter. And it's like you go through different people. Jung describes those as the other, but behind it's always the self. So as you move more and more through your own psychology and your own life, you come closer and closer to the self. It's like the planet revolving around the sun, but it's spiraling towards it closer and closer and closer. Since more and more things get integrated into consciousness, it grows bigger, bigger, bigger. And the area designated for one's complete potential development is then the self. So it would be a complete mapping in the end of self and ego and consciousness. But of course, this can never be completely reached, but this is what happens through one's life. So one encounters the self, one encounters the other, but always in different disguises, in the disguise of the shadow, in the disguise of the anima or the animus, and in the disguise of also emotions and interests. For Jung, this encounter with the self can happen that one just cuts the chase and immediately comes into contact with the self. And here he sees the root of many, many religious experiences to be overcome. And this is a very nice idea, to be completely overcome by seeing one's own personal potential realized, fully realized, and being in awe and trembling. But he saw that as a root of many religious experiences, to see the way things could be. The acorn suddenly sees the oak and is, of course, in awe. And this does not necessarily have to be the very first encounter one has with the self. So it's one thing. It's like you're not prepared, but something is happening with you, which can then be only described in a religious experience, the sense that you're encountering something transcendent. But the ego and the consciousness, by being limited from the very beginning and very only a small part, and only being able to perceive and act in what it can already do and knows might encounter the self and not recognize it. It's something where the value is not clear what it is, so it cannot be categorized in a certain way. So it might look like cheap or unimportant, but only through time it's realized, like in a twist movie where you find out, oh, you had the solution already from the beginning, but you needed to experience the whole movie to see, oh, that's important, that's the solution for the whole thing. He sees that mechanics playing out in alchemy, where the alchemist trying to synthesize the lapis, so the philosopher's stone, and he describes it like that. When people encounter the stone first, they just throw it away because they think, oh, it's unimportant. On a side note, for example, Einstein, when he had the revelation about E equals MC squared, he wrote it down before he had really the breakthrough to publish it and everything. It took him 8-9 years to really like process it. You encounter something, but it does not necessarily mean that you immediately can put it to use. It's a little bit like when your parents give you advice. It's you're way too young to understand it. And once you encounter the situation, that's it. Ah, okay, now I remember why I've been told this. So it's when you encounter it, it's very often too early and not recognized. So I very often until now use the description of that you have like the planet going around the sun, it's a circle, or you have a fenced off area of the collective unconscious, or you have a movement towards something, spiral motion, and so on. These are all descriptions of geometric patterns of motions. And here comes the second part of this topic, because very closely associated with the self is the experience of the mandala. And the reason for that is that through the motion of the ego and consciousness, through the self, there is something like a pattern drawn. So if you would see, for example, all your motions that you do, right now you're just one person, you're like one frame in a movie, but a movie has 24 frames a second. So you have a lot of still images, you and time. And by adding the time and seeing everything, let's say at once, you create a pattern throughout time. You could, for example, track your movements as you sit down where you're sitting right now, where you've gone through the day, it becomes a one big snake. Right now, you're at the head, you're at the top, but your tail goes out incredibly far. And similar for that, for thoughts, for emotions, for actions. This, for Jung, creates a geometrical pattern. And this pattern is very often a kind of mandala. And mandala is a word in Sanskrit for circle, easy enough. So it's very often round or rectangle, can also be a star or cross-like or any combination of those. And it very often, that I found interesting, consists of four parts. So when you have a mandala anywhere, very often there's somehow four parts in there. They're also very often equal. Jung saw this as a confirmation for his idea that there are only four cognitive functions, because he found the four cognitive functions also in mandalas. And the cool thing, it's not static, it's moving. So the circle, the mandala, is moving in a certain way. This can be clockwise or anti-clockwise. And this clockwise motion, Jung says, it describes very often a conscious mode of being, becoming conscious, and the anti-clockwise motion then going into the unconscious, going to the left side. Every time I read something like that, I go like, okay, yeah, that's, you can flip a coin and it can mean everything. But then there are all these weird coincidences, like you have the swastika. The swastika is a very old ancient symbol from the Buddhists. The original swastika, it goes to the right side. It moves clockwise. But the Nazis, when they used it, they flipped it around and it's anti-clockwise. And the Nazi movement was a pagan movement. It was the abandonment of civilization and going into a more primitive state of being, so getting rid of civilization. So then it's like, oh yeah, that's kind of a weird coincidence. But this is also a good way how to remember which direction is conscious and unconscious. But yeah, it's like everyone was transfixed by mandala going anti-clockwise into the in the unconscious and trying to or more barbaric and primitive. Jung used mandalas in his practice. He did it in a very interesting way. If you read the collective works, there's one book called Archetypes in the Collective Unconscious. I think it's the sixth book in the collection. And there's one chapter about a patient he had. And it was an American woman. I think she was in her 40s. She had a pretty complicated life and felt lost. That's why she went to therapy. And very often Jung would give his patients this task to draw things, to let them experience a creative spirit, something draws from inside them. And this was to see their internal mental state. So he would very often do dream analysis with them as a diagnostic tool, but also let them draw. What he experienced is when people were lost, that with time, mandala-like symbols and drawings would come up. And you have that in the book. This is very cool. You have the drawings, and then he's talking about the drawings. And he uses the shape of the mandala and also the content of the mandala to see what the psychological state is. So when it's like triangle, he said, like, there's something missing. It's only three. Or when it's only three parts in there, there have to be all four parts. The fourth part is always the hardest to integrate because it's, let's say, less compatible than all the rest. The vision seminar is building on top of that. So he had this patient longer, and later she started to have visions. And he then talked about these visions, but in a way, way lengthier fashion, as a seminar book is over 1,400 pages. So he would see the mandala as something happening in very important points in life, that people would experience it and see it in their dreams or in their drawing, that they become fascinated by it. And he would say that's happening in the tumultuous times when people are very disoriented and it's very chaotic on them. And that then this guiding self coming up and expressing itself in an order to show, like, there is a possibility for order. Because in the mandala, it's structured, it's symmetrical. Everything has its place. It's a little bit like a garden where everything is structured in a way that gives everything room to grow without everything being overbeared by something else. This happens not only in chaotic times, but also in times of very big change for the person. So in the process of individuation, a person traveling through their own psychology, these symbols of the mandala can pop up, especially in dreams. And the very cool thing is, and I've only understood it with the vision seminar, is it does not have to be a drawing. It can be emotion. So there is this one vision by the woman where she sees people on a square just going in circles, or things moving in circles. And he said, this is already a mandala. This is already like a charging up of something. It's a very powerful feeling to work in circles. So people go to concerts. I don't know if you've ever been to a mosh pit or circle pit. There's something very special happening that gives a special impression of the whole situation. When you see it in Mecca, for example, they all also go in a very big circle. So people moving in a circle is like a charging up of energy. And he sees that, saw that in the visions and also dreams of his patients, to saying there is something happening. There's a structuring starting to take place. It's mediated by the self acting inside the person and guiding it into a certain direction, into a bigger and fulfilled direction, or let's say not fulfilled, but rather into getting them into more complete position where they have more integrated, experienced more. So one important part for him, for Jung, this is one of the key concepts. Consciousness is not only a passenger, right? The way I described it right now, it sounds a little bit like consciousness is very passive. It's just things happening to consciousness, and it needs to go along. And if it goes along, everything will be fine. Individuation is a conscious process in the sense that everything coming from the unconscious is like a package, and it's completely mangled and twisted. It needs to be unpacked by consciousness, and it needs to be integrated. It's when you have a room and it's completely messed up. It's a little bit terrifying. It's confusing. You don't necessarily know where things are. I'm ordering them all. This is consciousness, bringing order for things and connecting them to each other, to bring everything into a coherent thing so that you can also act out things. When you're well organized and well put up, you can do things that you could not do if you would not be well organized. And he says very often what is today the problem is that this access to the unconscious has been lost. So people do not pay so much attention to dreams or contents that comes from the unconscious, but also that the cultural tools are missing to interpret them in the correct way. There he sees the role of mythology, religion, but also fairy tales to help people unpack these contents that come up. So the mandala coming up to people is not something unusual. He says even blind people see mandalas in their dreams. And he says children, they like to draw them and they also have them in their dreams. So it's like a natural occurrence. But the meaning to understand what it is and basically how it can be used, this is lacking, he says, in the modern time, especially in the West. It has to be consciousness paying attention to these contents. Otherwise, they were just float past. You forget them immediately, like a dream. You wake up, you forget it. But there's something important happening in the dream that consciousness should spend time with and unpack it and trying to integrate it. So he said, just because the mandala happens does not mean that, oh, now everything is fine. I have my ticket. I just take the ride. He says schizophrenics or people with psychosis, they have also these incredibly mandala dreams. But he says nobody is home to really experience them. The ego and consciousness, it's gone. There is no development. And he says you can find mandalas also in nature everywhere. You can find them in flowers, very often plants, individuation very often associated with plants because plants can grow. In contrast to animals, which grow for some time, but then age and die and get rather smaller with time. And he says also the self itself is not conscious. It is unconscious. Only consciousness is conscious. And this is a weird thing in the psyche where he says, okay, you have the ego, you have consciousness, and this is the things we can experience. We are aware that we are, and we can do things purposely. But the self itself, it's unconscious. Dreaming, sleeping, it also just does a little bit like an archetype, but as I said, a personal archetype that guides one. It's the oak is there, but it's sleeping, and the acorn is awake and tries to become the oak, but the conscious oak with time. And this makes the self difficult to map. Like everything that comes from the collective unconscious or unconscious in general, it's fuzzy, it's hard to say what is what, right? He sees it really as many different forces. This can be instinct, that can be archetypes acting against each other in the unconscious to see then the, okay, this is my personal part. This is my helping part. This is pretty tough. This can be confusing. But as with individuation, the self as an expression needs action and it needs doing. It's not intellectual. It's also bodily. It's not separated. Very often, especially today, we try to take our consciousness and trying to be in the abstract spiritual realm, but everything is connected with it. So also the body. And as I said, this motion described by everything you do throughout the day, creating this pattern through space and time. This is all part of the individuation process and also of the self expressing itself over time. The last thing I want to talk about is what it all means in a cultural context today. And I mentioned it before, he sees that there are very stark differences between the West and the East in regards to philosophy. He says, well, mainly in the West, it's missing this idea of the self and also of the mandala, like the mandala of the West, he says, is a cross and it's not very easily. And he said the most accurately expression of the self would be Jesus. But it's all in an infant stage. For him, the Eastern psychology of philosophy is much further in developing these ideas and elaborating on them just by virtue of having a more uninterrupted civilization. For example, in India, you have 5,000 years of uninterrupted civilization, of elaboration on the ideas and people exploring the unconscious and codifying it in a certain way. While in the West, you have very often interruptions. You have the pagan times and suddenly come the Christians and just install the operating system of Christianity on everyone. And now we're losing or have been losing pretty much Christianity. So it's like always this start and stop. This way says the mandala is in the West more a personal thing that people have to explore for themselves because the institution of the mandala is not as developed as in the East, where he says in the East, it can be a temple that can be visited and used be there as a inspiration and development point. But in the West, you basically have to build your own church made of wood that you find and some stones. So he says in the future, it's possible that the Western understanding will also be as far, but he said not at the moment. So this understanding we have to take in mind is almost 100 years old. Of course, in the East happened a lot, like communism and capitalism and all those things. So there's also a big disconnect now in many places to the old traditions. One thing he also said back then, and he pointed it out multiple times, is that we cannot simply, as Westerners, copy Eastern philosophy and say like, oh yeah, we just built on top of this 5,000 or more old, let's say, cultural elaboration about certain experiences. It cannot be done like this because of fundamental psychology, or let's say part of the psychology, it's different. So the needs of, let's say, immediate societal collective unconscious part are different. But I will talk about this in a later event about the psychology of the East and the West. And I want to thank you all for your attention. And I hope you learned a little bit about the self, that it all fits into Jung's pretty big view about psychology and the psyche. Thank you for listening.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Helpdesk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.